When I started this practice, I vowed never to get anywhere near all those numbered lists. I was just here to control my neurological pain and get a little serenity. Thank you very much. And a few years went by, and I kept hearing about the Four Noble Truths and suffering and ending suffering and the cause of suffering. And, you know, it would be wonderful to be free of misfortune. Let's see how we can do that. So eventually I kind of weaseled my way into learning a few of the numbers. This is the backbone of the numbers, the skeleton. Everything else hangs on the Eightfold Path. I like the image of a skeleton because at the top of the Eightfold Path is the head, and inside of that is the brain. So let me begin not at the top of it, but just eight. It's a lot to remember. Psychologists have said that most people can handle lists of three. But above that, you know, we start needing tricks like mnemonic devices and rhymes and things like that. Well, conveniently, the Eightfold Path is broken into three parts so we can remember them. And they are wisdom, ethics, and practice. And this is handy for us to remember because most Westerners, like me, come for the stress control. And if we're very lucky, we'll stay for the happiness. So the last three items on the Eightfold Path come into that third category of practice. And ironically, very few people, when they start meditating, get much beyond concentration. They say to me, "My practice isn't getting any better. Goodbye." You know, I try to explain, well, there's mindfulness and then there's wise effort too. And together, they compose our practice. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's go to the head, where it starts. This isn't necessarily you do this, then you do that, do you? But I think it is important to look at the head of the Eightfold Path and peek into the brain. Because the first item is wise understanding. Why are we doing this? Is it for stress control? Well, that's a nice byproduct. But if you look into the components of wise understanding, it's two things. The law of karma, basically the law of cause and effect. You reap what you sow. You take an intentional action, and it will have consequences that will stay with you for the rest of your lives. You know, in traditional teachings with the belief in reincarnation, it's life after life. This stays with you. For those of us who believe that this is it, karma is sufficient to explain that what we do intentionally will condition us to do similar things in the future. And the intention is so important because that's where we're putting our hearts. We're doing this in order to do X. That reflects our take on the moral order of the universe, if you will. Or at least the moral order of our minds and hearts. So if we're intentionally acting out of a mean streak, or jealousy, or defensiveness, or self-aggrandizement, it's going to cloud, it's going to distort the way we think and feel in the future. So that's karma. And then the other item that's included in wise understanding is the Four Noble Truths. So there's this lovely little circle that goes on in between the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. They contain each other in a way. Getting back to intentionality, what is it about? What's this all about? Well, it's about suffering. We're not as happy as we have a right to be. That sort of stating the problem in the ancient Hindu way of diagnosing and treating illnesses or other problems. So the problem is we're not happy. The why aren't we happy? The cause is clinging. We want things to be other than they are. We don't accept the truth of the moment. We push against it or we reach for something else. And that's clinging. Whether it's craving or aversion, it's negating, not being at peace with what's right here, right now. And needless to say that if we don't see what's right here now, we don't cope with it very well. If we're in delusion, a self-induced delusion about how things are now, our coping skills are going to be impaired. So the third noble truth is we don't have to go on this way. Being mentally and emotionally impaired in our conduct, our decision making, our responses to life, our happiness. There is a way to end suffering. And let me pause right now and say that the suffering at issue here is that we don't like things the way they are. You know, someone has a stroke and they lose control of half of their body. That's misfortune, according to a lot of people. But the suffering that we're talking about is the emotional and mental response to that event. That craving or aversion that people are feeling about this fact that's happened now. So I like to use the word dukkha because in common usage, suffering means bad things have happened. And in the terms of the Dharma, dukkha means we're responding to the truth of the moment in a way that doesn't serve us well. Causing us to be unhappy. Now, most people will put a fist on their hip and say, hey, I deserve to be unhappy. Well, yes, yeah, you've got a right to be. But how's that working for you? You know, we have a way to deal with things better. Certainly, if someone is unhappy about what has happened, they're fully deserving compassion. And here's another point of confusion. People are not to blame for their own dukkha. We can certainly want them to overcome it. And sometimes sharing the Dharma with them or modeling the way that we cope with things can help them. But by and large, it's an inside job. And so the number one thing that people need when they're having dukkha as a result of events is compassion. They need our compassion. And we need our own compassion because we do it too. It's pretty universal. First noble truth. And fourth noble truth, there's a way to, third, there's a way to end it. Fourth noble truth is, it's the Eightfold Path, completely fitting inside each other. The Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. So that's wise understanding, and it may be a little confusing, but for me, it takes on some clarity when you get to number two, which is wise intention. That intention becomes wise when it's informed by wise understanding. And that intentionality frees us from bad karma, leads us to the way and the will to end dukkha. You don't have a number of interconnected explanations for wise intention. It's really simple. The Buddha put it as the best direct translation from the Pali was non-harming. I think it takes on a meaning that's easier to embrace when we put it in the positive, which is kindness. To act out of kindness, knowing everyone is suffering. Everyone has dukkha. Everyone wants to end it. And everyone includes us. On the airplane ride of life, put your own mask on first. If you're in the midst of dukkha, with your mind clouded and your heart constricted, your ability to help others is going to be impaired. So this practice is so important in being able to help others. We have to soothe our hearts and clear our minds to do the best we can in helping other beings overcome their dukkha. And in the meantime, we have some guidelines for how to conduct ourselves as we go through our everyday experience. The number one way that we cause harm in our conduct is through unwise communication. I mean, we're totally social animals. We can't survive without society. So we have to communicate. And about 10 days ago, I got a vicious email that caused me dukkha throughout my visit with my in-laws, which I'd been looking forward to very much for many months. And I really didn't know how I could respond to this. So I quickly wrote an answer that said, I can't really talk now because I'm going away where I'm not going to have email or any of that stuff, so talk to you later. And then when I got back, I wrote the nicest thing I could think to say about addressing what had been communicated in this email. And communication has gone on and things have gotten a lot better. But there is sort of the cause and effect of what communication can do and how difficult it can be at times to not respond at the same level as unkind speech. And very often, the best we can do is just restrain ourselves. It's referred to in some circles as restraint of pen and tongue. Just can't go there now, catch you later. And the goal, again, is to end our own suffering and not cause more of the other person's. Because you can bet the communication that people impart is because they're hurting. There may have been a misunderstanding. Who knows? But something has loosened their screws, and they're just not functioning very well. And out has come this unfortunate bit of unwise speech. So once we can get over the impact of it and can genuinely engage in wise speech of our own, maybe after we've healed ourselves, we can help heal that person. Now, the next category is wise action. And in this day of social media, it's hard to imagine what people do that isn't verbal. But we do a lot. You know, driving a car can, I mean, if we apply wise intention to driving, traffic would be a lot better if everybody did that. I know someone who said that she never got in her car until she had meditated. And as she sat behind the wheel, she would say, "May I drive for the benefit of all beings." Yielding the right of way, even when the law says it's ours. Restraining, honking the horn, making obscene gestures. And, you know, punching somebody out. That's physical action. And on a more abstract level, we can plan to conduct matters in a way that takes a lot of communication. But that action, the overall plan, can be unkind. You know, as a business litigation attorney, I saw a lot of this. People who planned to use a lawsuit just to inflict harm on people. A lot of communication was involved. But it was unwise action to do that at all. Livelihood nowadays is kind of hard to... It was simpler in the Buddha's day. He just said, don't slaughter animals, don't work as a butcher, don't trade in intoxicants. You know, some simple things, because livelihood was pretty simple back then. It's a little more complicated now. I like to think of wise livelihood in terms of wise participation in the economy. You know, how we spend our dollars. I know someone who was intent back when hybrid cars were new on buying one in order to further the development of technology that didn't rely quite so much on fossil fuels. And, you know, it's working. What they did has apparently had an effect, because the green fuel economy is burgeoning. So We vote with our dollars, both the way we earn them and the way we spend them. I started out talking a little bit about the three folds in the path that have to do with practice. Mindfulness is what we talk about the most, but mindfulness requires concentration. You have to have enough mental discipline to know that you're staying with the thing that you've decided to focus on. Here I am, I'm paying attention to this. And then a point comes when you're not anymore. And you probably can't even remember that point. I like sometimes when I'm doing concentration practice to watch for the first bud of a thought. And that'll keep them at bay for a while. But then, you know, you get sleepy, your energy lags, whatever, and that thought comes in and just, like a hawk, grabs you and away you go. So if you've had enough concentration built up, then at some point you're going to realize that. And that's mindfulness in action. Another word for mindfulness in Pali is remembering. And that is remembering that we wanted to pay attention to the present moment. It brings us back. And that's, I think, why there's so much emphasis on mindfulness in our Western Buddhist tradition, because it's so helpful in functioning in our lives. And it's helpful in remembering that it's about suffering. That the point here isn't to be a meditation athlete, to win a prize at concentration or mindfulness, but to be a tool that will help us end dukkha. I was with a group of people yesterday talking about sharing with friends when we're upset. And I kind of laughed and I said, I barely have a feeling that I don't share. It's a big part of my practice. I suppose for people close to me it can get a little tiresome, but I like to know how I'm feeling. Because when I'm unhappy, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with me and the way I'm thinking. And I can do something about it. I don't consider it anyone's fault to be unhappy. Certainly not my own. But how are we going to do anything about it if we don't acknowledge it? And the Buddha said that all of the Dharma is in this fathom-long body, because one of the best ways to know that we're unhappy is that we feel bad. Our bodies will tell us, hey, pay attention. And it can be a heaviness or a burning or a tension. While we're watching our present experience, the occasion will arise where we get to feel our dukkha. And that is such a blessing. It's such an opportunity to make the acquaintance of the actual moment-to-moment experience of dukkha. And then as we go through our daily life, we feel that feeling. We remember the Four Noble Truths. It can be ended. And my favorite of the practice folds of the Eightfold Path is wise effort. That's where we use this practice to end the suffering. We notice when we're in a state of mind that causes or contains dukkha. And we discourage that state of mind. And I'm not saying that we don't need to process things. Sometimes we do. But we don't need to keep telling the story that has evoked that feeling of unhappiness. We don't have to dwell on it. And when I was out of town after getting that email, I got an opportunity to work with this because it kept arising. Oh, that person, oh, bad person. I'm going to really rip into them when I get back. Didn't want to be there. Did not want to have the feelings that that train of thought evoked. So I would just turn my attention away. And the best place for it to go is kindness, goodwill, and compassion. And if I couldn't have it for the writer of the email, I would have it for myself or the people around me, the family that I was visiting. Also in this wise effort is to encourage states of mind that lead to happiness. And the Brahma-viharas, the divine abode. I've already mentioned two, kindness and compassion. Compassion requires equanimity, or it's going to be a burnout. And equanimity is what allows us to be at peace with the truth of the moment. So it's an openness, an acceptance of what's real, and that includes our suffering and other people's suffering. And it's hard to accept, especially when our loved ones are suffering, that I care deeply that you're suffering, but unfortunately each of us owns our own dukkha, and we alone can end our own dukkha. So compassion requires the equanimity to accept, to recognize and accept this. And don't forget sympathetic joy. We can always go along with the happiness of others. Go for that ride with them. Be happy for their happiness. It's a win-win-win situation. So, I will wrap it up with repeating that the intention is kindness, and the kindness always has to be toward ourselves as well as others. On the airplane ride of life, put on your own mask first. Thank you.